Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, you and I have seen a large number of innovative technologies, digital technologies, over the last decade or two. Some people I know feel left behind in this ever-changing work environment, and my guest today offers some tips for us to stay competitive in that work environment. Again, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tracy Weiland is my guest, a public speaker focusing on the impact of technology on society, on work and careers. And she's the author of Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. And I'm telling you, it is a fascinating read. Tracy Weiland, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on your show, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm telling you, I was really fascinated by your book. I was thinking about myself. Part of my job is to be a professor here, and I teach broadcast classes. And I was thinking about the number of changes that just in that course, in the software that I have to use for broadcasting. I know that in the last 12 years or so, I've gone through at least 10 whole new systems, and it drives me nuts.
I'm sure it does, and broadcasting in particular has gone through so many changes, just in the media in general, from video to social media. And it is one of those a constant churn industries.
Yeah. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in as we talk about these technologies and how the workplace has changed. Have you had to keep up with new technologies in your workplace? What helps you adapt? How have you worked to stay career relevant? What tips would you share? And have you had to go back maybe to the drawing board with your career plans? We talk about all of that today with Tracy Weiland. And I hope you have a chance to take a look at her book. It's really, really a fascinating read. The number for you to call to join in, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show to do that. And, man, as I read your book, I was like, I hadn't thought about that, or I'd forgotten about that. You do such a nice job of documenting the great number of changes. And maybe you could talk a bit about how much the workplace has changed over the last decade or two.
Oh, sure. I mean, one change that people aren't aware of, but you should be, is that you're living longer. You know, you'll be living to 100 at least, and your kids might be living to 120. So that means your work life will increase dramatically from what your parents may have had at 20, 25 years now to 50 or 60 years. And if you think about that, you have to think about how relevant you need to stay to continue to participate in the workforce, whether it's through technology or skills or experience. I think that's really important. Another area is globalization. You know, it's created a lot of opportunities. You can start a business thanks to technology, in a matter of hours and take international currency. But then at the same time, it creates a lot of competitive forces for you. You have to compete not only with your neighbor, but with the rest of the world for jobs. And I think, you know, these are things that are happening real time at work that people should be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. You say there's not a ladder to climb anymore so much as it's a labyrinth.
Oh, exactly. You know, most jobs, if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, adults are staying employed in jobs for about 4 years, 4 months. That's been the average, whether it's by choice or not choice, which means that your career by default will have a series of changes and it will look more like a maze or a lattice than a ladder. And in addition, companies are looking for people who have made lateral moves and have collected skills and experience. So it can be a benefit if you accomplish something with each of your transitions.
You know, the cultural makeup, you talk about how it's changed in the workplace over time, and maybe talk a little more about that as well and what impact these changes might have on, especially on older employees.
Well, one change, you know, is just that we have now four and possibly five generations in the workforce. I just heard of a gentleman who's still working at Walmart at 102.
Well,
McDonald's tells me that, you know, they have employees coming in on work permits part-time at 14 and a half. So that creates just a varied workforce, whether it's in how what technologies they use or don't use, how they, you know, the environments that they come from, the expectations, the generational philosophy. So right there in itself, just working side by side with multiple generations in a workforce is something that we really haven't had as a dramatic change than in the past.
Yeah, that is a big difference. Have employee, what about training programs? They've evolved a bit over the years.
Well, here's what I suggest that people do if you are working and you'd like to keep up in a digital world. You know, one is if the company offers training, and many companies do, free to their employees, or they might offer funding for people to get training, I would take it. I did that for many years because I was in the workforce as a non-technology person. And these can be, you know, either, you know, in colleges or through programs that the companies organize. Two is, you know, you have IT help desks. These are wonderful people who know technology. I would get to know them and ask them for support and help when you don't understand. Number three is reverse mentoring. That's a program where executives often team up with younger people and they exchange technology expertise from the young person for mentoring expertise from the more seasoned person. And then also I encourage people to talk to vendors. Every company has a technology vendor coming, whether it's Apple, Intel, Cisco, Oracle. These people are, they know their stuff. They know the technology, and many times they'll just offer brown bag lunches or free seminars for people at work. And then the last one are free conferences. I was just participating in Paragon Development System free conference for IT about a week ago in Madison. And there was numbers of people there just coming to share best practices, to learn about technology, and to get in touch, you know, and keep up with people and ask questions. So I think there's a variety of ways and methods that you can use to learn about technology while working.
Our guest today, Tracy Weiland, she is the author of Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends, a public speaker. She focuses on the impact of technology on society and work and careers. And her book is fascinating. I can tell you that for sure. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share relating to changes in your workplace or even getting involved in getting into the workplace, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or again, you can post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show. So just go to the Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. Specific technologies, talk about the ones that are really changing the workplace forever, or at least have the potential to.
Sure, Larry. So the first one, of course, is social media. I think people realize that social media is pervasive and can impact businesses. One is just to get in touch with a consumer and have a dialogue. Two is to see, you know, how your brand is doing. And three is just a variety of communication channels, whether you're using Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest. And so I think, you know, social media is a big one for many companies. Number two is big data. You know, we're collecting and you know, just data from everywhere, whether it's from your phones or from your credit cards. And companies are saying, how can I make sense of this data so that I can use it to be either closer to my customer or analyze my customer or deliver better products to my customer? So that's, of course, a big one. Cloud computing or cloud, you know, moving services. All of us probably use some sort of cloud service. It's really just moving it off of the desktop and into an environment where it's hosted somewhere else so we can get applications. You know, on video, I use a lot of video and streaming video, if you know, in my presentations, but 18 to 34-year-olds would rather watch YouTube tutorials than TV, so video is a big one. And probably in the future, I think we'll see a lot more of gaming. I think our youngest generation is really using games more than previous generations, and that will be driven into the workforce as well. So I'd like to make a couple of points for people who maybe are, you know, trying to learn technology and aren't working. I go to Microsoft and Apple stores and Verizon, and I go and take their free workshops, and I get one-on-one tutorials at Microsoft for $1 a class. So my parents go to Adult Ed to learn about technology, and my friends go to meetups, and meetups are groups where people share and teach each other about different things. They meet over whether it's wine tasting or technology. So there's a lot of ways that you can also learn technology if you're not actually in the workforce.
And as you say, it oftentimes for free or very little money.
Yes, I mean, and if you're comfortable with going on to YouTube, I think a lot of people use YouTube as a way for, like, everything from how to tie a tie to how to program code or how to learn about something. So it's become a go-to source for more than just watching the latest song. And there's many free courses out there as well, Coursera or Code Academy. So if that's your, if you can enjoy, watching videos and learning that way, there's so much more available today than in the past. And in the past it was just, face-to-face classes, which are still available. But there's many more things that you can use today as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, thinking about that, there's sometimes you can almost have information overload. There's so much out there.
There is, and actually there's a skill, cognitive load management. It sounds like a big word, but it's really, can you filter in an information digital world, can you filter, what's important and what's not important? And you think about, well, when I went to school, the librarian would come in and teach us how to do effective search. And that's really just, a little more of that today. Can you do an effective Google search? Can you stream the right channels of information onto your desktop and manage your own cognitive load? So, yeah, it is a lot in a busy world, but there's ways that you can manage that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll take some calls now. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Talking today with public speaker Tracy Weiland, author of Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Go to our Facebook page as well if you have a comment or question at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're visiting about staying career relevant in this digital workplace with our guest, Tracy Weiland, author of Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. And let's turn to Lucy in Fort Atkinson. Lucy, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes, what's on your mind?
I have a question for Tracy, actually, about the opposite of this. I have several friends that are dealing with an issue. We're all in our early to mid-30s and have learned a lot of technical skills in school through internships and getting our master's degrees and going into the workplace. Some of the more established businesses aren't as technology ready as we are. And I'm wondering what we can do. One friend in particular is getting a lot of pushback from her company when she tries to implement new ideas. She's in the marketing department, and she is just getting a ton of pushback, and there's not the resources there that she's used to having. And wondering if your guest had any comments on that.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And actually, Lucy, it's a common problem that millennials commonly talk about. And in fact, one company that I was visiting with, we organized actually a session where we could talk about these things, and the net result is that they created a tag team group of millennials who are tech savvy to help people in the company understand the value of it. But with that aside, is people respond to the business case. So I think it's always important that when you have an idea that you follow it up with quantifiable metrics in a business case. What will this bring to the bottom line? Because business people are business people. If they only see that it's increasing in spend, they're going to be less likely to invest in it, especially if they don't understand it. Two, I think it's important to understand what the competition's doing, because it's always, helpful if you can show that as part of your business case that the competition is eating your lunch, for example, because you're not participating in it. And three is, I think you have to find small wins, small and quick wins. Is there someone in that organization who is more inclined to let you do a pilot project so that you can compare the results before and after, and then you can show success? I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of people who are not technology inclined, and so they just don't understand it. So you have to help them by using terms and language that they do understand, which is money, money, profit, loss statements. Good question, right. And it's very common. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, thank you very much.
Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And before we take another call, here's an email. Tracy, you write that to be competitive, you have to have an impeccable, compelling resume. Someone who's read your work here. What tips can you give us for creating the perfect resume?
So the resume, I want people to remember, does not get you to the job. It gets you an interview, right? So the resume is really your PR, your billboard, your pop-up ad, your calling card. So you want to make sure that the resume is a message, a PR statement, so that someone will pick it up, grab it, and say, I want that person, I need that person. So it should be very succinct in articulating your success. I encourage people to put in metrics about themselves, quantifiable success, your skills, your experience. And keep it to, if you can, keep it to a page. If you've been more seasoned in the workforce, like myself, I would cap it at 2 pages. Because it's important that you realize that they're going to scan it. They're going to look for, does it match an opening that I have? I'm going to say that again. Does it match an opening that I have? I'm not looking for a good person. I'm looking for a person to fill a job that I have an opening, and I'm looking for title, skills, industry, and background to fill that slot.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you. Excellent points there. Scott in Shawano has a question for you. Hi, Scott. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Larry. I always enjoy your shows when I get the chance to hear them, which isn't every day, unfortunately. I'm a physician, and I would point out that this move towards widespread increase in technology is not a universally positive move. There are some unintended consequences which need to be thought out, I think, for a small business owner particularly. One of the things that's happened in the medical field is that through the Affordable Care Act, which in general I'm for, it's kind of forced a national move towards rather rapid adoption of computerized medical records. And they don't have all the bugs worked out. And even where the bugs are worked out, when I say they aren't worked out, that means that competing vendors or vendors for various aspects of the business end versus the inventory control end versus the medical records, and all of these tend to be amenable to automation and computerization. But if those various programs don't communicate with each other, it leads to huge problems. Likewise, the very act of moving towards a medical record system, although it's positive in some ways, for instance, universal and rapid accessibility to a patient's record. So if a patient comes into the emergency room, I immediately know what their history is, even if they can't tell me. And that's a positive. There's no doubt about that. But whereas I used to spend 5 minutes on a chart and 25 minutes in the room with the patient, that has become closer to a 50-50 spread, as it's no longer easy to enter a chart. It becomes a labor-intensive process that sometimes takes 300, 350 clicks per patient to complete a record. And those mount up, particularly when it isn't just click, 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 click. It's click, think, click, think, click, yeah. Find, search, hunt, around, click, et cetera. And this is a theoretically wonderful change. I also am constantly amazed that sometimes a computer system doesn't seem to be able to keep track of, or doesn't seem oriented towards keeping track of the basic stats that you would think would be its strong point. And I can't think of a specific example, but one did occur to me the other day when I was working with a patient, and I was pretty shocked that those statistics weren't
right
kept.
There.
And the last point I'd make is that the best computer system in the world is worthless if people don't do their part in keeping the information up to date. So if I look at a patient's medications and the last three people who've seen them have not updated those meds, or they weren't automatically updated when a prescription was written, then the whole med list is unreliable. And I'll just take any response off the air.
All right, Scott, thank you very much for calling. Tracy?
Yes. Oh, yes, Scott. You know, I hear you 100%. All of these technology systems need people who understand how to design them so that they work for you as the physician and also for the patient. But, you know, and I'm benefiting actually from connected systems out here in Silicon Valley, and I can tell you it's a dream come true for me to be able to access all my profiles, make appointments, and get my test results online rather than having to run down to the doctor's office or call. But with that said, you know, I hear your frustration. There are, you know, big data, self-learning, artificial intelligence. You probably are aware Watson by IBM is making great strides in that computer systems will continue to self-learn, and they're testing it with prescriptions and prescription accuracy, as well as hypothesis on different kinds of diseases, as well as cures for cancer. So I know there's a struggle. I've lived through Silicon Valley's whole startup scene in many companies, and we've all endured it. But then when you see these breakthroughs and benefits, it's incredible. And I think medicine is going to be one of the biggest areas in healthcare where we're going to see the biggest bang for our buck with technology. But all great points.
Yeah, all great points. You actually, at some point in your book, you talk about the fact that some physicians may be, in a way, out of a position, out of jobs.
Well, when you think about it, robotics are doing incredible things in augmented virtual reality for physicians. I met an eye surgeon who would prefer to use augmented virtual reality for his eye surgery because he said it's the difference between being precise and exact. And when you're dealing with humans and eyes, you want it to be precise. And so he said, that he's seeing the benefit of using technology. And then, of course, there's Da Vinci robotics that are being trained to do a lot of these minutiae surgeries that we can't get in and accurately do. Many of us, you might be aware of a laser treatments. So technology is really, I think, enabling healthcare providers and physicians to potentially do more. So I think it's quite exciting, and they become, I would say, that you're competing with machines, not against machines, to help you really move the whole humanity ahead.
Again, talking with our guest, Tracy Weiland, who is the author of Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You outlined some careers, as long as we're talking about this, sort of a disruption in a way in the physician career area. But there are some other careers that have been sort of disrupted by things like big data, by social media and you know, mobile technologies. Are there some, you want to talk a little bit about some of the other ones that have been disrupted? And then maybe we can talk about some of those that are standing out as resilient to change.
Sure. Well, I think healthcare is a good one since we're on that topic, because I like healthcare for people who are starting off or don't know a career direction, because I view it as a building block career. You can start off with minimal education and training as, you know, in technician, and then, you know, try different certifications as you progress through healthcare stops and starts, and then figure out, do you like the patient side, the clinical side, do you like the technology side, do you like the data side of it? So I think healthcare has opened up a lot of doors for people who aren't physicians, you know. And it's not just about doctors and nurses anymore. There's just, you know, I just met an eyeball photographer. His job is to take photographs of eyeballs of anyone who comes into the optometry division of the system. So I think, you know, people can look there. On the opportunity side, you know, I always say to people, look up and look down. Look up into the air eventually, and we are already starting to explore in space. So there'll be a whole host of new careers that will be created, but through space exploration and, you know, consumer travel out of space, you know, as well as undersea. You know, there's a lot of things that are underwater that you may not be aware of. It's cabling and pipelines and electronics, and we need people who are also interested in underwater careers. So I think not only looking around you, but also looking up and looking down can be quite exciting for some new opportunities.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Mary in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me on the show. I work in the healthcare field, and electronic medical records have gained a lot in safety, but we have lost. We have lost patient contact. We have lost the face-to-face eye contact, the listening to somebody. When I am with a patient, I'm looking at the computer screen. I am required to look at the computer screen. I spend 60% of my time inputting data into the computer instead of listening and having face-to-face contact with my patients.
Mm.
You can't say that patient looks different, they've changed, because you don't see them. You're looking at the screen. Even when you go to a doctor's office, they are typing on their computer, looking at the screen, and not looking at the patient.
Mm.
How can we gain back that face-to-face listening and still keep the wonderful safety measures of technology?
Yeah, so it's a good point. And, you know, here are my comments. I don't know your situation or how the labor force was designed. You know, there's a skill called design mindset. Can you design the workflow to be optimal for productivity? And in your case, it's the patient and the interaction with the patient. So it sounds like maybe that the workflow was not designed with thinking through how does technology assist the patient. And so I can't really comment on that. In terms of technology proficiency, that's a second area. I mean, I do remember myself learning technology and being incredibly focused on learning the technology and absorbed, not able to interact, to the point where it becomes more like a language and more fluid, or having at least support systems perhaps in place for yourself to be able to assist you with some of those inputs. So I hear you, and I think it's just an evolution over time, and also making sure that we design the workflow to give us the greatest output using technology.
Yeah. You'd think that, you know, it's I could envision all kinds of ways that could be changed from having someone doing the inputting while somebody else talks. There's probably going to be ways to do it by simply speaking. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities, I think, Tracy, as we think about that.
Yes, yes. And, you know, there are many voice recognition devices. And as I, you know, mentioned, even Watson is making baby Watsons to really assist patients, physicians, excuse me, and nurses in a lot of these activities. So how can you use, again, compete with the technology to assist you, but it's all about designing the right workflow.
Yeah. We had another email. You say that the new career landscape is perfect for taking the chance to customize the career that's right for us. How do we do that?
Yeah. So, you know, remember that you're going to be working for 50 or 60 years, and that so that's going to just expand your landscape. So you can look out. I keep a piece of paper with me with 10 through 100 on it. And put in what are different things that I want to, goals that I want to do each year. What is my target for my career at this time? What do I want to explore? And, I had some people who I researched for and who evolved new careers by saying, what do I like to do? What do I do well? And what do I do well enough to get paid for? So if you're working in a job today and you're saying, I'm really good at this, could you spin out and make that into your own shingle, you know, hang it as a shingle and do your own business? So I think people have to be in touch with things that they like to do and do extremely well to assess, where do I want to take this? You know, do I want to move to a small firm, a medium firm? Do I want to try an entrepreneurial aspect? Do I want to try a franchise? You know, what are different things that I can try to really keep myself employed for life?
Yeah. And you talk a lot about, or quite a bit, I think, about within a company, sideways moves, which used to be not kind of frowned upon in a way, but now I seem to be rewarded.
Yes. In fact, the world is so incredibly complex and global that you can't really have people who are specialists anymore. You need people who have a variety of skills and experiences. So most recruiters will tell you that you can stay in a job for like 5 to 7 years, and if you've accomplished something there, and you've hit your a ceiling or a wall, it might be time to take that experience and open up a new door in your next firm, and that will be looked upon positively. If you would like to stay in the same firm that you're in, then raise your hand for lateral moves, special projects, cross-functional teams, things that can help you continually advance your skill set so that you can become a more relevant. You know, let's face it, the entrepreneurial employee today is the one that's highly regarded, and that's all about succession planning. Am I going to find someone, spot somebody in their 20s that's really viewing their job as a CEO that I can promote through the channels and really make them into our next generation leader?
Yeah, that's great, great, great advice. And, oh, darn, I had something in my head and it just flew out my brain here, unfortunately. And I'm struggling trying to remember it. We have career counseling, and that can be, I mean, you can get a little of that from your HR people, as you said earlier. And I think I think that's not a bad idea. And I think this whole business of moving, okay, now I kind of remember what I was going to say, and that is you have a certain strength. You might be very strong in it. But you also, the lateral moves help you be at least conversant in other areas. This is what you talk about in your book, conversant to the point that, I mean, you don't have to be an expert, but you need to be conversant.
That's right, because if you think about running a business today, you need to have general management skills. In fact, the highest ranked in the research study for this book was communication skills. You need to be able to work on a team, lead a team, communicate, which means written, speaking, negotiating, and you need to be able to, you know, talk to customers and vendors. So that's actually, you know, a highly valued skills today, in addition to understanding the business. Do you understand the business that you're working in? Do you understand the competition? Do you understand the landscape of where the business is going? So it isn't just about knowing your job, but, you know, how is your job changing in certain ways? And this is where, you know, to your point about technology is your job getting impacted by technology? I used to be in manufacturing. Well, 3D printing and robotics, definitely technologies in manufacturing. Those are things that I would want to know about and, you know, spend some time to get to understand how do I learn about these technologies, which can be through the vendors or different product sources, to be able to participate and work with robotics and 3D printing in my industry. So, yes, I think it is important that you understand more than just your own job and that one skill.
The way that the society is changing, the way that the workplace is changing is just absolutely unbelievable to me. And I wish you'd talk just a little bit and explain to our listeners, and something I should have asked you right off the bat, which is to talk a bit more about your book and what you have in that book that I know our listeners are going to find useful.
Well, thank you, Larry. The book is really, it was a collection of research studies that I've been doing over the years. And this study was a look at, a 360-degree look at careers today through the eyes of HR executives, hiring managers, recruiters, job seekers who found jobs today and their techniques, and what was different about getting a job today or planning your career today than in the past. And the finding was that, yes, it has dramatically changed in a digital world. We have shifted from a classical world to a digital world. The workforce has changed, jobs have changed, and will continue to change, and even the way that we find jobs has changed. And so, you know, I try to put in the best practices, the research results, so that people can understand how to really stay employed for life in a time when we are living longer and we will be working much longer than we expected.
And, excuse me, even though there are all these new things, one of the points that I think your experts have agreed on, that one of the best ways of getting a job or staying with a job or getting a new job is through the old-fashioned networking.
Yes. So there's a couple of points that recruiters will tell you. Number one, if you're looking for jobs, same or similar industry. You know, everyone, when they lose a job or they want to get out of the job they're in, they want it to be something completely different. You know, I'm in marketing, but I really want to be in finance or vice versa. That the approach is, if you want to leave a job and go to another company, go into the same or similar industry. Why? Because employers want to hire someone who can make a contribution on day one. So that's number one. Number two is look at vendors and competition. Those are your most likely places that you'll get hired more quickly than if you're looking in a completely different industry. Once you're inside, you can always make a lot of moves. You can change your functional area, or you can change, you know, make different moves, like lateral moves, to get you to closer to where you would like to try. And then, you know, number three is, yes, you know, you can network today. 60% to 75% of jobs, depending on who you're talking to, are found still through networking. The difference, right? Because people hire people, right? People hire people at the end of the day. People want to know the person. And how do you do that? Through your networks. And it can be through social networking. It can be through, you know, friends and family. And it can be through past employers. You know, employers are more inclined to hire people who know someone in the firm because they have more skin in the game. So referrals and networks are really important.
Yeah. Tracy, this has been wonderful. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us. You have your own site, website that we can go to as well.
I do, and thank you. My website is TracyWeilen.com, which is TracyWeilen.com. My Facebook is Dr. Tracy Weilen. My Twitter is at Tracy Weilen. I'm on Pinterest, and I'm open networker on LinkedIn, so I love to hear from people.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. Tracy, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really enjoyed your book, and great talking with you.
Larry, thank you so much for having me on your program.
Tracy Weilen, again, public speaker, as a very sharp individual, as I'm sure you gathered from listening to her talk. She's the author of Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. And it was great talking with her, and it really was an eye opener for me to read her book, which, by the way, I read online, which, 10 years ago, probably not. Things are changing. On the other hand, there are some old skills out there that you and I can use to remain self-sufficient. And we're going to be talking with the author of a book called More Forgotten Skills of Self-Sufficiency, and get ourselves involved a little bit in the art of bartering and trading and dickering with Caleb Warnock. Coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.